Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
His heart turned away from God, and that it was these foreign wives that turned his heart away from God. Even if this happened when he was old, the pattern was set when he was young. Isn't this the way it is with many sins in our life? Many sins which ruin a person when they are old, they didn't begin in their life when they were old. The pattern was set when the person was young, and the sin was not dealt with when the person was young, and therefore it became a crippling, a debilitating sin in their life later on in life.
Solomon was a great king, but his kingdom was ruined because of his sin in having many foreign wives. In today's message, Pastor David warns us about not dealing with sin issues early in life. None of us wants to have our fruitfulness for the Lord cut short because of debilitating sin in our lives. But unconfessed and unforsaken sin early in life can breed tremendous problems later in life. Are there roots of sin in your life that you need to deal with? Deal with them now before they bear destructive fruit in years to come. Now, let's join Pastor David for today's edition of Enduring Word.
All right, tonight we're going to consider 1 Kings chapters 3 and 4. Last week, we took a look at chapters 1 and 2, and we saw the beginning of the reign of Solomon and how actually he got off to a very good start in his reign. His father David was very careful to make sure that the throne successfully passed from David to Solomon, even though there was another one, another son of David, Adoniah, who tried to take the throne, but David successfully blocked Adoniah and put Solomon in as the king. And we saw that Solomon started out with great wisdom because there were enemies that stayed over from the previous reign of David. There were people that he had to deal with, and we saw that Solomon had the wisdom to deal with each case individually. And isn't that important? I mean, when you're a leader and you're dealing with people, it's important to see that not every situation is the same. And Solomon was wise and gracious enough to deal with each situation individually. And I told you that in some ways, at the end of chapter 2, even though it's still very early in the story of Solomon, we almost reached the height of Solomon's walk with God at the end of chapter 2, although that's going to need some explaining tonight. But let's look now at verse 1 of chapter 3. Now, Solomon made a treaty with Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and married Pharaoh's daughter. And he brought her to the city of David until he had finished building his own house and the house of the Lord and a wall all around Jerusalem. Now, marriage to fellow royalty was a common practice in the ancient world, as it is in our world today. When a prince or a princess is looking for a suitable marriage partner, they always look first among other royalty. And even if they end up marrying a commoner, that's not what they would prefer to do. They'd prefer to marry somebody with some kind of royal blood in them. And it wasn't just that desire to associate with your own people or your own class. They also saw that it was important to marry among other royal families to help make political alliances. If you were the Pharaoh of Egypt and your daughter was married to King Solomon of Israel, there would be much more likely to be peace among those two nations. And so these were not just romances, they were political alliances as well. But there's something that you need to understand. This was not Solomon's first marriage. By reading it here in chapter 3, verse 1, you would think that it was, wouldn't you? But 1 Kings chapter 14, verse 21, tells us that Solomon's son Rehoboam came to the throne when he was 41 years old. And 1 Kings 11, verse 42, tells us that Solomon reigned 40 years. This means that Rehoboam was born to his mother, which was a wife of Solomon named Naama the Ammonitess, before he came to the throne and before he married this daughter of Pharaoh. So this was not Solomon's first wife. This was perhaps the second, the third, we don't know exactly, but it was not Solomon's first wife. And these multiple marriages of Solomon and, might I say, his marriages to foreign women would cause a great spiritual disaster in his life. Keep a finger here in 1 Kings chapter 3. I want you to turn to the book of Nehemiah chapter 13. In Nehemiah chapter 13, Nehemiah is warning the people of God about the great dangers that would come to them as they lived in this land of Israel. Nehemiah chapter 13, beginning at verse 25. Nehemiah remembers Solomon's bad example as a way of rebuking the people of Israel. Look at it here. He says, "So I contended with them and cursed them and struck some of them and pulled out their hair and made them swear by God, saying, 'You shall not give your daughters as wives to their sons, nor take their daughters for your sons or yourselves.'" What is Nehemiah upset about? He's upset about the people of Israel marrying, intermarrying with the pagan nations around them. Now, look at verse 26. "Did not Solomon, the king of Israel, sin by these things? Yet among many nations, there was no king like him who is beloved of his God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, pagan women caused even him to sin." Now, you have to think about that. If Nehemiah, many hundreds of years after the time of Solomon, is looking back to Solomon and using him as a bad example, that should really make us take note. And it's very sad that right here in chapter 3, verse 1, you find Solomon marrying this foreign woman, and these foreign wives were going to be the downfall of Solomon. Now, let's make something perfectly clear. It's not that they were foreigners. It's not that they came from another nation. It's not because they may be even of a different look or a different race. All of that is irrelevant. The fact is that they worshiped other gods, and they brought this worship of these other gods into the life of Solomon and into the life of Israel. The foreign wives made Solomon more than just a bad example that Nehemiah quotes later. You could say that they ruined his spiritual life. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. But in 1 Kings chapter 11, it says that when Solomon was old, his heart turned away from God, and that it was these foreign wives that turned his heart away from God. Even if this happened when he was old, the pattern was set when he was young. Isn't this the way it is with many sins in our life? Many sins which ruin a person when they are old, they didn't begin in their life when they were old. The pattern was set when the person was young, and the sin was not dealt with when the person was young, and therefore it became a crippling, a debilitating sin in their life later on in life. I have to say one more thing about this. We also should consider, just at least for a moment, Solomon's father, David, right? Did you know that David also married pagan women? Or foreign women, at least, I should say. There's a woman called Maacha, the daughter of Talmai, the king of Geshur. David was able to marry this foreign woman, yet it was not an obstacle to his own relationship with God. It wasn't the fact that the woman was a foreigner that was bad. The fact of it was that she was a foreigner who kept her pagan gods and introduced this pagan worship into Israel. All right, now on to verse 2. It says, "Meanwhile, the people sacrificed at the high places because there was no house built for the name of the Lord until those days. And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David, except that he sacrificed and burned incense at the high places. Now the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar." Now, at this time, altars were allowed in Israel at various high places. Israel, wonderful place to visit. If you've never visited, it's worth taking a tour of Israel. You would see that the geography of Israel is hilly. It's filled with hills. And commonly, they would build altars or shrines to their gods on the top of these hills. For a very simple reason, the idea was you were closer to your God. I mean, you were up in a prominent place. Now, this also carried over into the worship of Yahweh, the God of Israel. They built altars of sacrifice to Yahweh on the tops of these high hills. Now, this is a very interesting sin, because it was definitely a sin. God wanted all the sacrifice at Israel to be done at a central place, at the tabernacle, which they built in the days of Moses, but was still existing at this time, or at the temple which Solomon will later build. He wanted all the sacrifice to come to the central place, the tabernacle, and then later the temple. But it seems that God almost winked at this sin, that he showed grace towards it because he didn't seem to penalize Israel that heavy with it. When you see it mentioned in the Bible, you always have the sense that God is not pleased with it, yet he never seems to bring judgment or discipline against Israel for this practice. I don't think that it was so much the high places that ruined Solomon, although it was not good. He should not have done it. It's more the way that it's put for us in these two verses, or actually these three verses, as you see in there in verse 3, where it says, "And Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of his father David, except." Now that's always a bad thing, isn't it? To have that said of anybody. They loved the Lord and they obeyed him, except for this or that they did. Again, he generally walked in the statutes of his father David. He did what David told him to do, except that he allowed these high places. And so it seems that God was showing some mercy to Israel and to Solomon while these high places existed until the temple was built. Now, at this high place at Gibeon, which was the great high place, it says that Solomon came and offered 1,000 burnt offerings. I want you to think about that for a minute. Very easy for us to read something like that in the Bible and just, okay, pass it by and go on to the next verse. Do you realize what it means to sacrifice 1,000 large animals? You know, these weren't like mice or hamsters that they were sacrificing. These were big animals. These were cattle. These were oxen. These were sheep and goats. I want you to think about how much work it was to sacrifice these animals. You know, when you go drive by the butcher shop and see, that's a hard job, isn't it? And today they have electric saws and they have power equipment that they use. Back then it was all, you know, with knives and hand saws and doing the whole work. This was, in many ways, the worship of ancient Israel would remind a person more of a modern butcher shop than it would of a church. Because it was bloody, it was messy, it was filled with the blood of the animals and the sweat of the priests. And this was 1,000 animals offered at the burnt offering. And this important event marked what we might consider to be the ceremonial beginning of Solomon's reign. Now, according to 2 Chronicles chapter 1, the entire leadership of the nation went with Solomon to Gibeah. So this was sort of an official ceremony. Solomon was holding the beginning, the ceremonial beginning of his reign, saying, yes, we're going to mark it with these 1,000 sacrifices to glorify God. And he did it there because there was the great high place. And what made this high place great? Well, it seems from comparing this text with 2 Chronicles, what made this high place great was that this is where the Ark of the Covenant, this is where the tabernacle was, even though the Ark of the Covenant was in Jerusalem. Now, this is a little bit strange. It gets a little bit confusing here. But we know that at the end of 2 Samuel, David had the Ark of the Covenant brought to Jerusalem. But it seems that the tabernacle stayed in Gibeah. And there's many people who wonder, well, why? Why didn't David leave the Ark of the Covenant with Gibeah? And it seems to me that the best answer is that David knew that the temple had to come to Jerusalem and had to be built at that place. And so he brought the Ark of the Covenant there. But he feared that if you brought the whole tabernacle there, then people would just be satisfied with having the tabernacle in Jerusalem instead of following through and saying, let's build the temple. So for this period of years, you sort of had a strange arrangement in the worship of Israel. You had the tabernacle at one place and the Ark of the Covenant at another place. And so here Solomon makes this amazing sacrifice at Gibeon. And now in verse 5, something remarkable happens in the life of Solomon. It says, at Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night. And God said, ask, what shall I give you? Solomon said, you have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with you. You have continued this great kindness for him, and you have given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. Again, stop right there. We'll continue on in just a moment, but you need to consider the scene here. He's offered these 1,000 sacrifices. He goes to bed that night, and God appears to Solomon in a dream. Now, might I say, this is one of the more significant dreams in the Bible. There's a few of them. Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. Pharaoh had a dream that Joseph interpreted. Nebuchadnezzar's dream, of course, was interpreted by Daniel. You have a few significant dreams in the Bible, and this is one of them. This didn't happen while the sacrifices were being made, but presumably the night after they were made. So God appears to Solomon in a dream, and God says to Solomon, "Ask, what shall I give you?" Now, isn't that an amazing promise? God seems to offer Solomon whatever he wants. And it wasn't just because Solomon offered 1,000 animals. Maybe you think, oh man, I want God to make that kind of offer to me. I'll offer 1,000 sacrifices. That wasn't it. It was because his heart was surrendered to God, and God wanted to work something in Solomon through this offer and through the response of Solomon. But I can't read this without wishing that God would make that kind of offer to me. Wouldn't you love it if God would say, listen, what do you want? What shall I give you? And then I start reading my Bible and I realize God has made such an offer to me. Right? Matthew 7:7. Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. Or John 15:7. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, you will ask what you desire and it shall be done for you. Or 1 John 5:14. Now, this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. We have promises like this. So you can imagine Solomon receiving this. Now, it's kind of interesting because I'm going to start applying some evaluation of Solomon in this. Although it's kind of interesting because we're considering this is Solomon in a dream, right? But yet I think we can still evaluate him in this dream. And he's smart enough, he's wise enough to just not blurt out a request. Instead, at first he gives thanks. Isn't that wonderful? He gave thanks and he said, "You have shown great mercy to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in truth and righteousness and in uprightness of heart with you. And you've continued this great kindness for him and you've given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day." I want you to remember that. Solomon did not say, "You've shown great mercy to me." He said, "You've shown great mercy to my father, David." It might seem like a small point, but you'll see why it's more important than you might think. But then Solomon goes on in verse 7, and he says, "Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king instead of my father David. But I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or to come in." It's interesting. You read some commentators on this, and they'll try to make the argument that actually Solomon must have been a very young man when he made this request. That's not the situation at all. He's a fully grown adult man. He was not really the age of a child. He's just putting his own place in a very humble way. He's saying, "God, I'm as if I were a child before you." It's his poetic way of expressing how inadequate he feels in front of the job in front of him. And you have to say, you have to love Solomon's attitude here. He says in verse 7, "Now, O Lord my God, you've made your servant king instead of my father David, but I am a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in, and your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, too numerous to be numbered or counted. Therefore, give to your servant an understanding heart to judge your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" You know, I think Solomon, he didn't have a false humility that said, "I can't do this job, so I won't even try." Isn't that the attitude we often have? Instead, Solomon's attitude was, "This job is so much bigger than I am, I have to rely on God. I have to receive an empowering, a wisdom from God to do it." And so he said, "Please, God, give me an understanding heart." I love how Solomon puts that there in verse 9. "Give to your servant an understanding heart." He wanted more than knowledge. He wanted understanding. You understand the distinction between the two. A person can be very smart. They can have great knowledge, but they can lack wisdom. They can lack life wisdom on how to deal with things. Solomon had great knowledge, but that's not what he really wanted from the Lord. He wanted understanding. And what's great about it is he wanted the understanding in his heart. He didn't ask for it in his head. Actually, the ancient Hebrew word that's translated here, understanding, it's really translated hearing. You know what Solomon actually asked for? He said, God, give me a hearing heart. Isn't that a beautiful request? God, give me a hearing heart, a heart that hears you, and therefore it will understand. Give me a hearing heart. Why? Look at it there. So that I may discern between good and evil, for who is able to judge this great people of yours? Solomon understood that a very important aspect of leadership is wise and just discernment. And because many leaders don't have this discernment or don't have the courage to use it, they can't lead well. Okay, so understand what Solomon's asking for. He wants to be the best king for Israel he can be. He looks at the job and he sees how great it is. He looks at his own weaknesses and inadequacies and he says, God, give me the ability to do the best job for you and for your people that I can do. And so what's God's response to that? Look at it in verse 10. The speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. Then God said to him, because you have asked for this thing and have not asked long life for yourself, nor have asked riches for yourself, nor have asked life, the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern justice, behold, I have done according to your words. See, I have given you a wise and understanding heart, so that there has not been anyone like you before you, nor shall any like you arise after you. And I have also given you what you have not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be anyone like you among the kings all your days. So if you walk in my ways to keep my statutes and my commandments as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. Then Solomon awoke, and indeed it had been a dream, and he came to Jerusalem and stood before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, offered up burnt offerings, offered peace offerings, and made a feast for all of his servants. Was God happy or not happy with what Solomon asked for? God was happy with it. God was pleased by what Solomon asked for, because it showed that Solomon understood his great need for wisdom, for discernment, and for understanding. But God was also pleased by what Solomon did not ask for, in that he didn't ask for riches or fame or power for himself. Sometimes I wonder if God isn't just as pleased by what we don't ask for in prayer as he is by what we do. And this certainly seemed to be the case with Solomon. So I have to say, you look at Solomon's request and you say, this was a good request. We're specifically told that the speech pleased the Lord. Solomon asked for a good thing. But here's a question I have for you. Did Solomon ask for the best thing? I don't think so. You see, in my mind, Solomon is one of the most interesting and complicated characters of the Old Testament. Here, he certainly does a good thing. Listen, I'm not trying to rewrite the Bible and make it sound as if Solomon did something bad here. He did something good and God said so. But I don't think it was the best. Let me explain to you what I mean. Solomon wanted wisdom and enabling from the Lord so that he could do a good job for the Lord.
Thanks so much for joining us today for this edition of Enduring Word Radio. Over the years in Christian media, we've seen all sorts of misrepresentations about supporting ministries. Everything from give your last dollar to if you don't give, God's work won't be done. These sorts of manipulations are not biblical, and they do not represent God's heart for giving. Here at Enduring Word Radio, we want to run fast and far from these sorts of misrepresentations. That said, it's also important for us to be faithful to share with you the ongoing financial needs that we do have. Enduring Word Radio is heard all over the United States. The program that you listen to today was professionally produced, and purchasing time on some radio stations comes with a cost. So we want to be sure to at least inform you and ask that you seek the Lord about supporting Enduring Word Radio. There's a secure option to give right on the homepage of enduringword.com. You can give a one-time gift or partner with us on a monthly basis. Again, that secure option to support Enduring Word Radio is available at enduringword.com. In closing, our thoughts on ministry is where God guides, God provides. God is faithful, and He will continue to provide for Enduring Word Radio. Again, thanks so much for joining us today for Enduring Word Radio with Pastor David Guzik. It's our hope and prayer that today's message has been a blessing to you. Until next time, may God bless you and keep you.